You're listening to Baseline from 538.
You're listening to Baseline from 538.
You're listening to Baseline from 538.
You're listening to Baseline from 548.
538.
Damn it!
538.
Hi, this is Carl Bialik of 538. Welcome back to Baseline, the mini podcast that we're recording live at the US Open for the second year in a row. We're going to have episodes breaking down the results and stats two or three times each week of the tournament. And you can find us in the feed for the 538 Sports Podcast, Hot Takedown. I'm really excited this morning because I'm welcoming back Louisa Thomas. Louisa and I did three episodes together last year. This year we're only going to be able to do this one. She's here covering the tournament for the New Yorker. And I feel like since we haven't done a podcast together for almost a year, which is kind of a tragedy, we could probably talk here all day in the rain. But this is supposed to be 15 minutes in Flushing, not 50 minutes. I don't want to make producer Jorge Estrada's job of editing this too difficult. So let's dive right in. Louisa, it's raining. Why is that interesting?
Because we're going to be playing tennis in the rain.
You and I?
I wish. They are going to close the roof, and Simona Halep is going to go on in about 30-some-odd minutes. Not just Simona Halep, but...
There's another player.
Lucy Zaparova.
Who has been in a slam final more recently.
She has. Yeah, so this is really exciting. Tennis in the rain at the U.S. Open. We have had major weather problems for many years, which has prompted the U.S. Open to revamp its grounds, and... follow suit with all the majors now except for the French. So we can play on fast.
So we were just talking before starting recording about last night when for the first time during a match the roof closed. Were you watching?
I was actually on my way back into the city as the roof was closing, so I missed the historic moment.
Were you watching on Twitter or anything? Did you catch any
of that? Yes, no, I was aware of the historic moment.
It was a crowd cheering for rain. It was incredible. The USTA sent, I thought, a brilliant press release, and they summed up the stats of the roof closure. 5 minutes, 35 seconds of closing time, 7 minutes, 22 seconds with no play. And we've seen bathroom breaks that take longer. We've seen medical timeouts that take longer. It was over before I got out my camera and got my little video of a roof slowly closing.
Yeah, it's funny to talk about a roof as a big moment in the history of tennis, let alone in a tournament. But you know, it is a big deal for this tournament for sure.
Yeah, we can stay somewhat on schedule. So the big story of the tournament. Still is that the two favorites, the number ones, Serena Williams, Novak Djokovic, are still in the draw. They're still looking good in our 538 forecast model. We're giving Serena Williams 58%, Novak Djokovic 60%. Neither of those percentages take into account the injuries they came into the tournament with, but we've now seen them on court. They've each won one match, and Djokovic has gotten another round with a walkover. Do you think those percentages make sense?
I think those percentages make sense. I think Djokovic really got lucky with that walkover. It gives him a little bit of extra time to rest. I mean, I think that, you know, he comes into this tournament not with the same sense of inevitability that he has been coming into the slams recently, because we have watched him lose a couple of times unexpectedly. So at the same time, he is certainly the guy to beat.
So I just want to talk for a second about that walkover Djokovic got, which could change the course of his tournament because he has two extra days rest with the injury he's been dealing with. He was supposed to face Yuri Vesely. Vesely only made the match because of a couple of millimeters on his second serve. He was down match point. His second serve was called out, giving the match to his opponent, Zach Etmaneni. But hold on, the umpire overrules it. Vesely gets another first serve, wins the point, wins the match, and then withdraws. And I don't think Maneni would have beaten Djokovic, but maybe those extra 2 days of rest will matter for Djokovic later in the tournament. Now, speaking of Vesely and Djokovic, we've got Vesely, a young guy coming up, Djokovic, now 29, and still at the top of the sport, along with Andy Murray, who was born a week earlier. And our model says that Djokovic, Murray, and Rafael Nadal, who's 30, each have a greater than 50% chance of reaching the semifinals. Combined, they have an 84% chance of winning the tournament. That leaves 16% for all the other guys still in the draw. And then when you think of the younger players in them, you have Milos Raonic, who just reached the Wimbledon final, but he lost yesterday. He got cramps, which he said were brought on by stress caused by overexuberance. So we're still left with a situation. No man born 1989 or later has ever won a big title of any kind. Do you think it might happen here? And if not, when?
You know, I'm terrible at predicting, so I'm going to punt on that question. I still think that the Djokovic and Murray in particular are the two guys who are just clearly ahead of the rest of the field. But, you know, things happen. We have seen things happen. We've seen things happen at this very tournament. So, yeah, I mean, for sure we are in a moment that feels like some kind of transition. We've been saying that for a long time. So, you know, I don't know how much faith to put in that. You know, and it's really interesting to see guys themselves kind of micro-slicing. I was really struck in Ryan Harrison's press conference last night. Someone brought up the fact that he was playing a player his own age, and he stopped and said, well, no, you know, Raonic is 2 years older than me. We're really not the same age. And it's true that, you know, that there are many more Grand Slams of experience in there, so it is a kind of generational shift, but it was hilarious. But this is how they think. They really want to kind of keep themselves out of that, you know, quote-unquote lost generation. So we'll see what happens. There are a lot of tremendous young players coming up and who are capable of just absolutely blitzing tennis. So it could happen. But, you know, the single most remarkable thing about the remarkable, you know, quote-unquote big four or 4.5 or however we're going to parse it, is their consistency. So really big four. And until the next generation or the generation after shows that, you know, those guys are still the guys to beat.
Now, this may sound like micro-slicing, but you talked about the young guys coming up. We've got sort of the guys younger than Milos Raonic, Kei Nishikori, Grigor Dimitrov, that next generation, Nick Kyrgios, Dominic Thiem, Borna Coric. Coric is already out, but do you think that next group, if we're not micro-slicing too much, might lap the field, might pass those guys kind of born very late 80s, very early 90s?
You know, I think that this... Certainly, they have shown a kind of fearlessness, which feels new. You know, I think that guys like, you know, Sasha Zverev and Dominic Thiem, and, you know, they have shown that they are not scared of playing Roger Federer and will beat him, you know, and there is no kind of... That does feel different. That does feel necessary in some way, and I don't think that they're scared of the Milos generation either. So, you know, I do think it's possible that we're going to have the next champion is going to come out of that cohort and not, you know, and not the middle one. But, you know, but we'll see. Winning, you know, seven rounds of a Grand Slam is really, really, really hard. And it sometimes does come down to millimeters, as we've already learned. So it comes down to luck, you know, it comes down to all sorts of things that are in their control and out of their control. And so much, you know, even like a fit of exuberance maybe can shake them. So, you know, I need to be convinced by results, and they're not there yet. So
show me the wins. Speaking of wins, Serena Williams. She is, on the one hand, our overwhelming favorite to win, and on the other hand, holding on somewhat precariously to something she's held for years, the number one ranking. You're holding in front of you, kind of folded over, WTA info sheet about the scenarios for number one, and one of those names on this dead tree version of the number one scenarios is already out of date because Garbiñe Muguruza was eliminated surprisingly last night. But we still have two women who could overtake Williams for number one. So let's talk about first Angelique Kerber.
Well, if Serena Williams does not make the semifinals, there is, and Radwanska does not win the tournament, you know, we're going to have a new number one, and it's going to be Angelique Kerber. And she is a name that is becoming more familiar to a lot of tennis fans because she beat Serena Williams at the Australian Open, but that happened in the middle of the night and a lot of people weren't watching. She played her very competitively at Wimbledon, but I think she's still kind of anonymous in tennis in a lot of ways. So it's a pretty kind of startlingly big moment that is in some ways, I actually think, underappreciated, because this is a big deal. I think we all have a sense that Serena Williams is so far and away ahead of the rest of the field, and here she is. She might, you know, wake up after the U.S. Open not as the number one player. You know, she's still the favorite in the tournament, so she's still the favorite to hold on to that ranking. But yeah, this is another on the women's side too. We are, and actually probably even more. The transition is further along on the women's side, I would say, partly because there's only one, you know, undisputed favorite. But Kerber has been playing well. You know, she is. If she gets this title, she will number one ranking. She will have earned it.
Yeah. We had 4 or 5 years ago when Serena Williams was also winning slams, but less consistently and less consistent play on the rest of the tour. We did have other number ones who are younger than Williams by quite a lot. Caroline Wozniacki, Nara Safina. Neither of them ever won majors, and that became a big point of controversy. But if Williams doesn't win this one, or if Kerber does, they're either tied or Kerber is ahead of her for majors this year. Kerber also has the runner-up at Wimbledon and the Olympic silver. Would this feel like a deserved number one then?
I think so. I mean, I think that Serena, you know, Serena has been the number one for so long, over so many periods in her career that, and, you know, she's about to turn 35. And I think that the number one ranking isn't as big a deal to her. She's had some injury problems. She's not scheduling in a way that would indicate that this is really what she cares about now. I think what she cares about is winning, you know, winning slams, and that totally makes sense to me. So I think that, you know, we might want to step back and say, well, is this such a reflection of, you know, her slipping grasp on the top, or is it, you know, more a kind of natural, you know, reprioritization of her, you know, of what she wants to accomplish with the rest of her career. And I think both things are true. I do think that Kerber will have deserved it, because Kerber has not only had just phenomenal success at the slam level this year, but she has shown week in and week out that she is, you know, the best or one of the best players at the top of the game. And the women's tour has had some, one of the gripes on the women's tour is that, you know, players don't show consistency, you know, that they can show that they can play phenomenal tennis, but then they lose them. I mean, Muguruza being kind of example number one. Kerber, you know, this summer, she is coming into this tournament having made the Wimbledon final in Cincinnati, final at Montreal. These are big tournaments. The final, the Olympics, and here she has a chance to win number one. That's how you do it, guys. You know, that is legitimacy right there.
Now, you like to write about watching players and learning about their tennis game and about themselves. We watched Kerber for a little bit yesterday. Tell me a little bit about watching Kerber and what to appreciate about it.
Kerber is a brawler. She's someone who has been kind of described a little bit negatively for a lot of her career, is kind of too consistent, too much of a counterpuncher. But the thing that impresses me is that she's really actually an aggressive, one of her favorite words, offensive player. And she has this amazing improvisational ability. She can take pace and put some more on it. She has a weird lefty forehand. She's a very abbreviated backswing, and she can hit it very, 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 very flat down the line. And that is really a kill shot, which a lot of more kind of conventional counterpunchers like Caroline Wozniacki don't have. You know, we were watching her yesterday. Her service games are always, you know, I think Carl rightly said that in some ways her second serve is probably her most attackable shot. So, you know, she's not she's not going to blow you off the court because of that. Yeah, she's fun to watch because she is in every single point. And then at the end of a lot of points, she's going to do something interesting with the ball.
Well, there's so many other players I want to ask you about, including Halep, who's about to take the court. But we should wrap up. And I'm just going to ask this question, which maybe you can work Halep into if you want. Because she might face Serena Williams in the quarterfinal, which would be quite a blockbuster and a tough draw for both of them. We're giving them about the same chance to win. I want to know who you think has less chance to win, Djokovic or Williams. Who's more likely to be upset?
That's a good question. I think I need to see a little bit more of Djokovic to see where his injury is at. Serena Williams, in her first round, she was doing that kind of like queenly perfect stroke clinic thing. I mean, she was unbeatable in that match. So I have good feelings about her state of play. And I think a lot of the pressure is off having won Wimbledon. I think that she comes into this pretty fresh. But she's vulnerable. She's always been vulnerable on any given day in her career, and that's probably getting more so. And, so I'd probably give her the edge. Before the Olympics, I would have said Djokovic.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. Just to be contrarian, I'm going to say she has a slightly slower chance to win, partially because of that Halep quarterfinal. Djokovic's draw has opened up somewhat. And also because that best of three sets format that she has to play, I just think she could start off slow and then not be able to come all the way back. But I still think they're overwhelming favorites.
Do keep an eye on that quarterfinal, though, because Simona Halep has been playing some incredible tennis this summer and has shown that she can beat Serena Williams. And we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and if you're listening to this after Halep's match today and she lost, then Serena Williams has a really good chance. That's all for this episode of Baseline. Thank you so much for joining, Louisa. Great to reunite here at the U.S. Open.
Always a pleasure. Wish we could do it every single day all year.
Every day is a Grand Slam tennis day in our minds. Thanks also to our producer, Jorge Estrada, and additional help from Jody Avergan, Tony Chow, Chadwick Matlin, Ryan Nantel, and Joe Sykes. We'll be back soon with another conversation about the U.S. Open. And in the meantime, be sure to check out our ongoing coverage, including our constantly updating U.S. Open forecast at 538, as well as on ESPN.com. And subscribe to Hot Takedown so you don't miss an episode. You can email us at podcasts@538.com with any comments or suggestions.